Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. We're going to be catching everybody up on the latest topics in college football and college basketball. It is the offseason now, but that doesn't mean there's not plenty to talk about. So we'll bring in our first two callers on the college football side, Alex Kalogides and Dustin Schutte. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Colin?
Hey, Colin.
Not too much. We'll get things started the way that every team wants to end the season, and that's talking about the national championship. It's always interesting to see teams go through sort of these waves where they have that window to compete for a national title, whether it's a team like Florida State, as we've talked about on the podcast here, that uses some great recruiting classes to sort of have a window, and they did get a title. One that looks like it'll be opening up soon here is Tennessee. We're all pretty high on them, the recruiting classes they've had the past few years. But one that gets overlooked is Michigan State. And I know you guys are big Big Ten guys, both follow up pretty closely. And the Spartans have had great years, but they've barely missed whether it's a Big Ten championship or making the college football playoff. Dustin, you have an article that's going to come out actually right towards the end of this podcast here about Michigan State and sort of whether they've missed their opportunity. Do you think it's a little too late, or is this the last year that they can really compete for a national championship for a while?
Well, I think that window is starting to slowly close, just for the simple fact that I think teams, not only in the Big Ten, but in Michigan State's same division and the Big Ten East, are improving. I mean, now you've got Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, and Penn State looks to be on the rise, especially with the NCAA sanctions gone. Ohio State and Urban Meyer, they're not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And, you know, you really don't have, I guess, too much to worry about from Maryland, Rutgers, and Indiana, but they can occasionally, a team like Maryland or Rutgers can sneak up and maybe play a threat here once they establish themselves in the Big Ten. And then over in the West Division, you've obviously got Wisconsin and Nebraska, and then Northwestern's going to have a few hit-or-miss years as well. I think the one thing that kind of stuck out to me, though, is, you know, Michigan State has had opportunities. The season they went 13-1 and won the Rose Bowl, they had lost to Notre Dame early in the season. A couple years before that, I think it was 2010, when they finished 11-2, they had got blown out by Iowa, and that was potentially another season when they could have maybe made a run at a national title. This year, they had, you know, it was theirs to take. You know, everybody thought that this was going to be the lock for them to get the college football playoff, especially with Braxton Miller out. They lose to Oregon. It doesn't completely dismantle their hopes of getting to the national title, but then the loss to Ohio State pretty much sends their title dreams into the sky. So I think Michigan State is still good enough to get there, but I think the competition around them is getting better, and that's going to make it even more difficult for Mark D'Antonio to get his Spartans into a college football playoff. I think the talent's still there, but I think that window is starting to slowly close with as much talent as they've got rising around them.
Alex, do you agree that it's just as much about... whether I'm saying they could compete in years to come. Do you agree with Dustin that it's a lot about the competition as well, outside of how good your team is?
Hey, Colin, can you repeat that? I think you were breaking up on my phone, man.
Yeah, I was just asking, do you agree with Dustin that it is just as much about the competition, kind of like a Florida State that took advantage of a weak ACC? Is Michigan State's window closing because of programs like Michigan that are assumed to be on the rise, and Wisconsin? Or is it more, if you have a great program, it doesn't really matter whether your conference or division is weak?
Well, I think you got to look at it from a few different factors. I think, you know, we as fans, we kind of look at Michigan State as that one sibling that can't do anything wrong and the one that we don't want to yell at, because I think when you look at Spartan and the team that wins 10 or 11 games a season, I mean, we almost spoil it. And you know, for a lower tier program, that'd be great, you know, to win 10 or 11 games a year. And Michigan State's so consistent in winning games and, you know, competing in the Big Ten that we never really think about it. But I think Justin made a great point. And he almost brought up a point that, you know, you never really even think about it because Michigan State's always so good, is that they really can't jump over that plateau. And, you know, you talk about Jim Harbaugh. You know, by the time 2017 comes, and, you know, you got Michigan State playing Oregon in 2015, their schedule is, you know, brutal already enough as far as non-conference with Oregon, and then they play BYU and Notre Dame in 2016, and, you know, that's going without saying they're going to be matched up with Urban Meyer every year. So, you know, by the time, you know, that stuff passes, is Michigan going to be developed? Is a team like Nebraska going to be, you know, competing for a Big Ten championship? So, you know, I think it's this year or never, honestly. And I really liked what I saw from Michigan State last year. And, you know, maybe it's just me, you know, being a guy that likes to see offense swing it around. But you had their traditional style defense, and then you had, you know, somewhat irregular offense and a non-traditional offense that really flung the ball around and was really fun to watch. So I have to agree with Dustin on this one. But like I said, it was almost a weird point that he brought up, because we never really see Michigan State as a team that's really vying for a national championship, because they're winning 10 or 11 games every year. But I think if it's not going to be this year, then I don't know when it will be.
Yeah, it's definitely clear that the division you play in is pretty important. Maybe it helps to have that division be in a down year if you're trying to run the table and go undefeated. Dustin, I'll pose a question to you that is pretty simple. It could be a yes or no answer, but it has a lot of different layers to it. In your mind, in 2015, will the SEC West be the best division in college football?
Yeah, that's a toss-up for me, and there's only one other conference, or division, I should say, in college football that would probably compete with it from top to bottom, and to me, that would be the Pac-12 South. Both those divisions are going to be really good. I don't know. I mean, when you're talking about an SEC team, an SEC division, we've glorified that conference so much that it's almost just to go against the grain to grant them as, you know, as to pick against them to be the best division in college football. But when you look at what the Pac-12 South did last year with Arizona State, and UCLA all winning 10 games, USC and Utah winning 9 games, and then Colorado was the bottom feeder. I think they finished 2-10 and didn't win a conference game. I mean, that's a pretty strong division in itself. What typically happens with the SEC West, and why a lot of people want to kind of dismiss it, is because those teams beat up on each other week in, week out. So, you know, you always have an Alabama, and there's always seems to be an outlier, too. You know, this year it was Mississippi and Mississippi State that really kind of rose to the top there early in the season. I think competitively the SEC West probably is the best conference or the best division in college football, but I think that the Pac-12 South is right there along with it. And we may see, you know, some of those teams, like I think Arizona is going to get better. USC is obviously going to be competing for a national championship, or so we think. Utah will probably be better. UCLA might be about the same. So it's going to be interesting, but I think those are the two divisions that are going to be the highlight of the 2015 college football season.
Alex, is there a reason to you the conference that produced last year's national champion, Ohio State, one of those divisions can't compete for the best in college basketball? Or, sorry, college football?
You know, right now, I mean, it's pretty much up in the air. And, you know, like, talking about it, and I've mentioned it in a few other podcasts, talking about the possibility of a team like, you know, Georgia Tech or Clemson, or even NC State, I know we talked about them as a sleeper, coming from the ACC, and, you know, we touch about that. And, Colin, I know you're an ACC guy, and we joke that, you know, the ACC may not be as tough as the SEC or the Pac-12, but I think if you're talking about the Big Ten in general right now, if it's not going to be Ohio State, it's kind of kind of difficult to pinpoint a team. I know, Dustin, you like Penn State's chances as a sleeper. I think that's a pretty great choice. And the possibility of a team come out of the Big 12, too. I mean, I know we talked about, you know, the loophole of having a, you know, somebody coming out of there without a conference championship. So right now it's easy to say, you know, yeah, that there is a sleeper or an underdog, but I think once it's all said and done, you're going to see a team like USC or, you know, Alabama or Auburn win it this year. Or at least I do, you know, at least, but it's too early to say for me right now, Colin.
Yeah, it's tough to say this early in the year, especially when so many teams contribute to that. You have 6-7 teams in each division. Alex, you started an interesting series, though, yesterday about some of the teams in 2015 that will be the most experienced. Now, really takes the level of talent out of it, sort of these aren't necessarily the teams that have the top recruiting classes, but you kicked it off with UMass, have a couple others coming shortly here. Who are some of the teams that do have a ton of experience that could win games pretty much on that alone and maybe surprise some people this year?
Yeah, well, I'm going to stay on the same topic here with the Tennessee Volunteers. And the thing that I love about this is that everybody's talking about Tennessee and they're bringing up the recruiting classes coming up. They're talking about the athletes. They're talking about them inching towards breaking the SEC surface. But people, I think, have forgotten that these are one of the teams that's bringing back an army of starters. I mean, you're talking about 18 guys coming back from last year, which is tied first in the SEC with Vanderbilt. And, you know, you got a lot of productivity coming back on offense. You have Worley, you have Bird, you got guys that can really make some noise in the SEC. And then that defensive line could be very good as well. So that's one to look at. Another one, which I'll also probably be writing on Saturday or Sunday, is the Cal Golden Bears. And, you know, just as I talked about the offense, I don't know if this is me being biased towards running the five wide and running 80 plays a game, but I do love watching Cal play. And I know somebody, as today, you also wrote about Jared Goff, how he could be a dark horse Heisman winner. And he really, really improved over his freshman to sophomore year. And he'll be a junior. He's got a lot of receivers coming back. So, and also going back to Tennessee, they are plus 11,000 to win the national championship. And I also mentioned that they are offering some pretty good value, a $100 bet on them to win the national championship with payout over 10 grand. So when you throw in experience and you throw in the already rumors about them being, you know, a better team this year, it's not a bad look at all.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that, you know, I think most experienced teams, they have to be upperclassmen, you know, tons of seniors. Tennessee, you're right, they have a lot of experience coming back, but even so, a lot of them are underclassmen. There's a lot of sophomores who played as freshmen last year. Dustin, do you think that could be a problem with a team like Tennessee? Even though they do have experience, it's still mostly underclassmen. Could that hurt them if they are coming down the stretch trying to win the SEC, that they don't have many upperclassmen on the field?
I don't think it's as big of a factor as we'd like to maybe say. You know, we've seen Jameis Winston, who is a freshman, and Johnny Manziel really excel and lead their teams to high levels. I think it comes down to a matter if you have the mental capacity and the stability to win football games, if you're accustomed to winning games. You know, one of the things I think we saw this past season with Mississippi State and Ole Miss down the stretch is those, you know, some of those guys, even though that they had won, they had taken down Alabama and Mississippi State had knocked off LSU. A lot of those guys weren't accustomed to winning big games, and they weren't accustomed to winning for that long a stretch and having that much pressure put on them. So I think it doesn't really matter, because you can have a group of seniors who they may win three or four games, and yeah, as freshmen, and they may have a really big class, a really good talented class, but if they're not accustomed to winning, if that's not in their mind, they may only win seven or eight games. I mean, football is a very mental sport. So I think Tennessee, with the success they've had in the past, I think they're going to continue to grow, and I think that's why they're a favorite this year. I think they can win quite a few games and be a contender there in the SEC East, but it's going to be a real challenge to see how mentally tough these kids are. I don't think it's about what the letters are next to your name under the class. what your class is in college football. I think it's more about where your mental status is and how you're able to close out games and how accustomed you are to winning and not letting defeat get into your mind.
All right, well, that's a good send-off into next week. We'll be talking about some of the teams we think that are going to surprise this year. Thank you guys for joining the podcast today. You can catch Alex and Dustin multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter at AlexK_47 and at Sharp_Shooter. That's SCHUTTER. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks.
All right, let's move over to the college basketball world. We'll have Andrew Beverly and Bobby Reagan on. Hey, guys, how's
it
going?
Yo, what's up? Hey, what's up?
Not too much. I'm really excited to be talking about the Wake Forest Demon Deacons here in a moment, but
yeah.
We'll hold on just a second for that segment, but no, it's coming, and I know both you guys are actually
good
Wake fans as well. Bobby, I'll start with you, though. You had two articles come out today that were talking about sort of the difference between the top programs in the country and the top places that a lot of people would like to coach, bringing in the factors of some lower expectations. Maybe they aren't basketball schools, also the areas that they're able to recruit. How are those two things different in your mind in terms of where someone would like to coach the most and where maybe they have the most job stability?
Yeah, what kind of triggered it was this offseason with Texas and Florida both needing to hire a new coach and the names that were thrown out, and then, you know, the yearly tradition of the rumors of Calipari leaving to the NBA and, okay, who would replace him at Kentucky? Well, if you hear the names at, you know, Kentucky, it's Brad Stevens, it's Sean Miller, it's big name guys. Where Florida, you know, it was Archie Miller, and then they eventually settled for Michael White. So the difference is, you know, those five blue blood programs are the ones that any coach in America takes without question. Whereas the other five, it's kind of, you know, you're a good coach, but you're not among the elite. You know, you're not getting the calls for Kansas, for North Carolina. So that's kind of the difference between the two. And again, you know, it's not saying they're bad positions by any means. It's just whether it's a football, and most of them are football schools. So whether, you know, basketball is a second priority, you know, the success hasn't been there in the past, that there's not as high as expectations. So you can kind of be there for a while, build a program like you see John Beilein has done at Michigan. Those are kind of the difference between the two. Whereas, obviously, if you're at Kentucky, Duke, Carolina, Kansas, you need to win year one.
Bev, do you think that we'll see more and more coaches choosing places more on stability than prestige? And I know that each coaching carousel each year is different, but you look at perhaps a guy like Larry Brown at SMU, and he's turned that into a great program. Even somebody like maybe Bruce Pearl, who winds up at Auburn, but maybe could have waited around longer and had a bigger name job. Do you think it's something we'll see more and more coaches choosing stability over prestige, or is that even happening at all right now?
You know, I mean, I kind of agree with Bobby in that, you know, the jobs everybody wants are the big name programs. And I personally don't really understand taking a job for stability. I mean, unless it's for the money, which is a big reason. So I don't know why I said I don't understand that. But do I think more coaches will start picking jobs for security? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think Shaka Smart got the best of both worlds, because, you know, Texas is a football school. You know, but they also have the money and the resources to be, you know, amazing. So,
and yeah, that's a good example. Shaka waited around for a long time. He could have had a lot of pretty marquee jobs before this off season, and yet he waited around for, I guess, that perfect combination of both. And clearly Texas isn't a blue blood college basketball program, but
yeah.
He can recruit the best talent in the nation and probably have a good bit more job stability than if he were at one of those blue blood programs.
They kept
Rick Barnes for 17 years.
we know your disdain for Rick Barnes.
Yeah.
It is well documented.
Yeah.
So
I actually think Barnes would do really, really well at Tennessee. And by really, really well at Tennessee, have like top 15 programs with 5-star talent, yet never really like make it that deep. Maybe get to an Elite Eight or something.
Right. Well, one coaching hire that seems to be doing pretty well is Danny Manning of the Demon Deacons.
Good day. Not qualifying for the CBI. Doing really well.
And yes, Wake Forest has.
All I'm saying is Montverde Academy, the high school, would have had more talent than Wake did this year. Like, and no, I'm not joking.
I wouldn't argue that with you.
Those guys may be coming to Wake. Fun fact. But,
possibly.
Well, one of them is definitely coming to Wake from Montverde Academy. And then another one, Noah Dickerson, just decommitted from Florida. So.
Well, Bev, you were talking earlier. We were talking how Brandon Childress, who is committed to go to Wake, is actually moving up recruiting rankings now. A lot since he recruited to Wake Forest. This is last year now. And then you have possibly more guys coming. Harry Giles, I mean, that would be a huge land for Wake, but that's still a possibility. You have the guy, I forget his name, who you just said decommitted. Do you think that first Wake Forest has a chance of landing some of these guys and making a splash in recruiting, Bev?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do, and I think the tandem of Danny Manning and Randall Childress, you know, is great for recruiting. I mean, dude, like in 2 weeks, in some like freakishly short time frame, Manning was able to bring in Dinos Mitoglou, the Greek guy that nobody knew about, who's the most skilled player probably on the Wake Forest team right now. He pulled in Mitch Wilbekin, who contributed immediately, was a starter. He pulled in Cornelius Hudson, a.k.a. Michael Crabtree Jr. And he was great. Nobody knew who the hell he was. And it's like, I mean, yeah, you know, and this year with their first real class, I mean, they got Bryant Crawford coming in from the D.C. area, top 100 guy. I mean, he just keeps getting better. Darrell Moore, a 7-footer from Montverde Academy, is coming in. He's a top 50 guy. And then John Collins, another big guy. I mean, like all of these guys were being pursued, you know, by teams. I mean, Darrell Moore got an offer from Kentucky. Like, Bryant Crawford chose Wake over, you know, hometown Georgetown. And a bunch of other like ACC schools. I think he also picked us over I don't know. I would need to look at his list, but he picked us over a ton of schools. I'm kind of hyped up, but in 2015 is a great class, but 2016 is really the year that Wake fans should be looking forward to, because Brandon Childress is coming in and he's been dominating the summer league so far. He's gotten a lot better. He's, his shot is improving. He's grown into his body. And he was already a great shooter. But the biggest thing with Brandon Childress is that he's in school in Winston-Salem, and his team happens to be one of the most talented teams around. Like Harry Giles, who 24/7 Sports just moved up to their number one player for 2016. I mean, it's going to be Duke or Wake for Giles. mean, and he's Brandon Childress's best friend. They also have Quay Parker, who's a four-star, top 60 guy, who's a heavyweight Forrest Lean, and Jalen Johnson, who's right outside the top 100, a four-star guy. Like, all of those guys are on the same team, and they all could very well, you know, come to weight together. I mean, it's wishful thinking to get all of them, but I think at least two of them come to Wake.
So it seems like the talent evaluation is definitely there. But, Bobby, you know, as a Kentucky fan, that's not the only piece of the puzzle. There has to be great coaching. There has to be even still talent development. Do you think that if Wake can get some of these guys two, 3 years down the road, they can be a contender in the ACC? Can they fill in that talent with improving the program to where it's a consistent winner? Or is this a case where they have the talent, but they don't really have the program, the coaching to get to the next level?
Yeah, you know, a little foreshadowing for Throwback Thursday article tomorrow. It's going to be about Wake Forest and exactly what I'm about to say. It's not like Wake Forest is some bum program. They've been good before. They've been really good before. You know, they have – Lawrence Stroll Coliseum is phenomenal facilities. It's a gorgeous campus. You know, the recruiting area in North Carolina is one of the best states to just recruit from home from. I don't see Danny Manning there for long. That's the big problem. I think he's really waiting for that. Maybe another job to open up before Kansas, maybe a little more prestigious job before Kansas. That's his end goal. You know, when you look at who's going to be the next head coach of Kansas, you assume it's him or Mark Turgeon from Maryland. So does he jump? You got to worry about that. I think the coaching staff is there because I think Randolph Childress, who is not only the greatest basketball player of all time, but one of the best assistant coaches in the country. He's great at developing talent. I mean, he's doing it with his own son, as Andrew kind of said. So I think they can be good. They can compete. They've done it before. It's not like they've never competed in the ACC. It's not like they've never been a number one seed or number one ranking. I think it can happen. It's just going to be, you know, I think it's too early to tell. You know, this question can be asked next year. You know, see what happens now that he's getting his classes in. And really how they develop. You know, they got to start winning some close games. They can't get blown out on the road at Georgia Tech. Stuff like that can't happen.
And that's happened, like, every year for, like, the past 15 years, regardless of how, like, good, like, either team has been. We always go to Georgia Tech and get killed. And it never
really makes Georgia Tech any sense.
Yeah, but, they're not anymore, and that's the problem. Like...
Well, it's one step at a time for the Demon Deacons, but I do think there are some good things coming, especially with the talent they have coming in. If they can get one or two more of these big-name guys, it'll really turn things around. But you guys enjoyed talking about Wake Forest so much that we didn't get to our last topic. So tune in next week to talk about the top returners in college basketball, what they can improve the most, both for their team and for their NBA draft stock. For some of those guys like Buddy Hield, Melo Trimble, who turned down the NBA, what they can improve to improve their draft stock. Thanks, guys, for joining us today. You can catch Bev and Bobby on Today's You just about every single day. And you can follow them on Twitter. Bev is at Andrew_Bev. Bobby is
I'll get better at tweeting, I promise.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right. See y'all.